SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, listening on Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com. A second day and the middle portion of Book One at Keeneland after yesterday's terrific. What else are you going to say? Terrific opening session. We'll talk to Jessica Martini from TDN to start the second half of the show. The noon, actually very comfortable noon starting time, and the way in which the sessions are scheduled, a couple hundred hips each the first 3 days comprising Book One. And so, for instance, yesterday, what they must have ended up at about 5, 5:10. And it makes for nice pacing. Really a good way to ease into the 2 weeks. Then things will pick up in terms of length of the sessions, and they'll get into the earlier evening when they start Book Two on Friday. And Saturday they'll sell 300 and change each day. And then next week about 400 are cataloged for each of the sessions. Yesterday, and we'll get a lot of the details from Jess, but you had seven-figure sellers. The session topper, the Tappet Colt, to Godolphin, who was very active yesterday, Sheikh Mo on hand, $2.5 million for the Hinkle bred and consigned colt out of Seeking Gabriel and Gabrielle. And the second seller, the Medaglia d'Oro out of Tara's Tango, mentioned Tara's Tango and her first foal, and it's a home run, Stone Street. Bred and raised, consigned by Denali Stud. Big day for the Banderoffs and for the Hinkle family. Godolphin with the top two knockdowns, $2,150,000 for the Medaglia d'Oro colt, $2.5 million for the Tappet. Curlin with a very big day and a second $1 million hip for Hinkle, because the colt out of Transportation, $1,050,000 to Shadwell and Sheikh Hamdan, who was just as spirited a buyer as his brother. Sheikh Hamdan for Shadwell, of course, and I know I've got the totals somewhere. I think, let's see, I've got it here. I'm going to tell you right away. Godolphin bought 3, Shadwell bought 5. $5,250,000 for Godolphin with their 3 purchases, and Shadwell, $3,060,000, averaging $612,000 per hip. And they're not done, obviously. They'll buy plenty more. Larry Best. You can't hold a big-time horse sale without Larry Best. Larry, the Oxo Equine, when you see it, an Into Mischief, he does not see an Into Mischief that he doesn't want to buy. Unbelievable. He buys the Sealy Hill Colt. Bred by Bonchance and consigned by Gainway. That was $950,000, and he also took home the Into Mischief that Hertrick and Fielding, $750,000 for that one. That was hip 28 early in the sale. The top filly, a Medaglia d'Oro, not surprising, out of the flatter mare, Snowshoe. Barbara Banky. Stone Street buys this one. Bred by the Branhams, $950,000. Hip 114. Stone Street really on both sides, selling and buying. Plenty active. And a lot to digest out of not just day one, but this book one activity. And we'll get some of the best stories from Jessica Martini when she joins us. And the thing that's amazing, I don't know if you saw any other quotes from Bob Elliston, but of the three book one sessions, this wasn't necessarily the one that they expected to have, you know, the kind of fireworks. It's hard to do book one, book two comparisons, but session one versus session one, this was very strong. And it didn't start out. I watched about the first, must have been the first hour and a half, and then had to do some things. And then Tina came home, and we sat outside, had some coffee, and watched the middle portion of the action. I missed the $2.5 million seller live, and then did catch the second $2 million purchase a little later. And this was a great way to start the long road of 2 weeks of horse sale. So we'll get Jessica, her colleague Brian DiDonato will join us Thursday. We'll have Sid live from Lexington tomorrow. He's on hand. And we'll see how everything out of these first major sessions. They'll take Thursday off, and then book two Friday and Saturday. Really one of the most interesting fortnights of the calendar, the Keeneland sale. Nice, diverse, seemed like a very diverse group of buyers. We'll see what Jessica has to say. Happened to note, you know, some of the top sellers going to Japanese interests. You had plenty of partnership type activity. The one thing I didn't really delve into in terms of the buyers, we'll ask Jessica what she saw out of curiosity regarding some of the pinhook interests. I'm curious, looking down the pages, printed out it, just the 9 pages, and then there was a widow, the last seller. The last seller went by itself, $250,000. Judmon, actually, buying a Union Rags colt out of Wild Forest. That was the last. I hadn't seen the until now. I hadn't really noticed the last purchase. But, Peter Bradley, 180, late in the sale for a quality road filly. A Tappet filly for Len Green, DJ Stable. That could be a pinhook procurement, as it happens. RNAs, I think, were 29%. I think that's the number that I saw. So we'll flesh out the rest of the stories when Jessica Martini joins us. And as we always say, it's never too early on these conversation mornings. Never too early for a martini when it's Jessica Martini from the TDN. And great coverage by TDN, by Nicole Russo, also by the team at Bloodhorse. I mean, there's just virtually every nook and cranny of the sale activity gets covered, especially these big early sessions. Today, will watch for a few prominent broodmares in particular, some personal favorites. Catherine Sophia, her first foal goes today as Hip 301. And the Banderoffs, the Nally, had a very nice day yesterday. A couple of Curlins for 800,000. Curlin had an excellent day again. And, of course, Curlin so big at Saratoga, carrying the sale. Day at the Spa, her second baby is a Tappet filly. Catherine Sophia's filly is by Pioneer of the Nile. There's quite a few notable Pioneer of the Niles today. Brownie Points, the lovely Brownie Points. And Denali's got this colt by Pioneer of the Nile today as well. Believe You Can, Airdrie, Barry Jones, the Kentucky Oaks winning filly. She's got a Warfront colt that's sure to be, absolutely sure to be popular. Appealing Zophie, very strong female family. Frosted, a lot of people watching the Frosted. Also Denali, holy cow. Just looking at some of the hips to watch that Nicole Russo had put together. Winter Memories, early, very early today. Winter Memories filly by Tappet. Darby Dan, of course. Little unusual to see them sell a filly. Usually it's the boys. Usually it's the boys that sell. And they keep the fillies. But here's a chance to buy into one of the really strong female families. And, of course, we talked yesterday with Catman. You heard him in the last hour on the replay. Winter Sunset. And this is the full sister, actually. This would be, if it's a Tappet. Yeah, Tappet, Winter Memories. So full sister to now the, well, I think she's actually, this is her, that was her second stake at Indiana. So as always, we're fascinated and captivated by the sale. And we'll look forward to it and conversations the next couple of days as well. Sid, tomorrow. We're going to have a guest that, you know, it's been too long between visits. And Rob Whiteley, as respected a breeder and herd manager as there's been in you know the second half of the century and into the 2000s. Rob, you know, has only got a handful of mares these days, just six of them. But he's going to join us after this break to talk about the mare cover limit. Yesterday, I thought Matt Hegarty was terrific talking about the nuts and bolts of the story, but the first, literally the first person I thought of to bring some historic perspective to this was Rob Whiteley. And you know, for those that over the years have read Rob's insights about the industry and about breeding, in the TDN, when he would write the op-eds and so forth, you know just how thoughtful he is. And I think you'll get a valuable perspective, particularly about how this affects, how this could potentially benefit the smaller breeder, who is the one that has been at the greatest disadvantage against these, you know, these large books. The biodiversity topic, I don't know. That jury seems to be out, but because, you know, there's a certain, I said this yesterday, there's a certain base of of stallions out there these days. So Rob Whiteley is going to join us, and delighted to any reason is a good reason to talk to Rob Whiteley, but this was particularly appropriate, I thought, for you to hear from Rob. Dick Powell, we'll talk about yesterday at Presque Isle and the mile yesterday. And there's that man again, the Earl of Mack. Earl Mack on one that he owns by himself, not in partnership. Mr. Ritz, Josie Carroll, comes in and wins the Presque Isle mile yesterday. There was also the Malvern Rose, and there's also at Finger Lakes yesterday, the aspirant and the lady finger. We'll get those results in. Andy Serling, top of hour two. Talk about the weekend in more detail, about the action at Belmont and all the good racing that lies ahead. Hopefully some prices might actually win a few races. It was a crazy parade of... How crazy was it? Until a certain point, I think on Sunday, the longest price of the first 3 days of Belmont was the Chad Brown Stake winner that paid close to $20 that won the Christie Cat. It was a turf war, right? We're going to also, I'm really looking forward to Glenn Todd and daughter Shelly Todd, hour three. You saw what they did at Hastings. I mean, they've won a lot of races over the years, Glenn Todd has, at Hastings, but they won the British Columbia Derby, the British Columbia Oaks, and one of the supporting stakes. So we'll talk to the Todds, too, and more. Take a break. Rob Whiteley when we come back.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horseville.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horseville.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horseville.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division. Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Under the island, middle of a mountain, there is a big bad booming system. Blowing speakers, woofers and tweeters, amplifiers, melted wires. The party's exploded, chorus corroded, underground, a Puget Sound, causing a shift in.
We're back at the races. 20 minutes in, and one day into the Heeneland sale. Over the weekend, the industry digested the suggestion from the Jockey Club to limit the registration of foals by sires to 140. And this is something that the standardbred industry has done. When this came about, this was being discussed and floated, the person I thought that I wanted to hear from and that everybody would enjoy hearing from would be Rob Whiteley, who has had such a thoughtful approach to industry issues for his entire career. And it's a career that is just distinguished in so many ways, so many horses as a breeder, as a co-breeder. With Tom Evans, Trackside Farm, and as an agent, picking out horses, Foxfield. I mean, the whole segment would be dominated, Rob, if I talked about your accomplishments. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Rob, this was something, and I talked to you yesterday off air, and I said, Rob Whiteley is the right kind of person to hear from about this Jockey Club book size limit concept. And with all the different areas that you touched on and your expertise was contributed to, I wanted to get your reaction to this idea.
Well, I'm thrilled by this proposal, Steve. The Jockey Club is trying to look out for all of us, really, trying to look out for the welfare of the industry over the long haul. They don't have the clout to fix the industry. They don't have the clout we need. So, it would...
Oof. Rob, having a little phone. I talked to Rob yesterday for 45 minutes, and the phone didn't cut out once. She call him back if you would. That's unbelievable. We yesterday afternoon, Rob and I talked. I mean, we talked a million different things too. Meadow Star and some of the favorites that he was involved in. And for those of you that because Rob has kind of pulled back over the last, 5-6 years. He still has a half a dozen mares, but and he's also, he's 77, 78. And Henny Hughes and Roman Ruler, El Corridor, on and on, Badge of Silver, I think Midnight Loot. So many different. Rob, I was telling everybody, we talked for 45 minutes yesterday, and the phone, we didn't have one second where your phone was problematic. Unbelievable. But you're back.
Yep, I'm back. I was saying I'm really applauding the Jockey Club for making this proposal and for encouraging discussion related to the long-term well-being of our industry. I'm thrilled. Because typically, our fragmented industry goes about its business wearing sleeping masks with, no or very, very little vision related to how to make things better for the future for everyone. So, across the industry, we haven't been very good at planning for the future and asking ourselves how we can develop an overall business plan that's good for everybody, thereby growing the industry as a whole. So, I'm very happy that the Jockey Club is showing leadership in some way that might make things better for the industry at large, for the breeders. And let me just say here, Steve, that stallion owners are not the breeders. This is often misunderstood. They are semen owners and sellers. And to call them breeders is a misnomer, just as the Breeders' Cup is a misnomer. The breeders are the mare owners who maintain their mare for a year, jump through hoops to get their mare cycling and bred, hope to get their mare pregnant, hope for a live foal, and then sweat out a year and a half until yearling sale time, hoping to get their horse sold to at least cover costs. So this Jockey Club proposal is proactive, and I'm happy they're addressing the problem of huge books because it will help breeders.
Rob, explain how the proliferation of these enormous books and in excess of 200 in some cases. I mean, the number kept growing. It went from 60 to 80 to 100 to 125. And the next thing you know, you have stallions that are into mischief with 230 covers. How did that hurt, and how has that hurt the small to medium size quality breeder?
Well, it's developed by supply and demand, obviously. But it really has an impact, particularly on the little guy. Numbers of mares being bred now compared to when I came into the business are down more than 50%. And for 12 of the last 13 years, the numbers of mares bred have declined as we lose more and more small breeders and commercial breeders who are not wealthy enough to use losses as tax write-offs. To the extent that we lose the little guy, we, as an industry and long-term viable business, you know, we're slowly dying from a tiny bleed in our toe. And the breeder has the purchase price of the mare, and then at $30 a day, it's about $13,000 for carrying the mare for a year, including vet fees and transport back and forth to the breeding shed. Then way too often, when the mare needs to be bred, you may not be able to get to the stallion when you need to because of the huge number of mares booked to the stallion on a particular day. They might be lined up, and only a certain number can get in. This means you're pushed later in the year toward a late cover and could end up with a May foal, which is punished, although wrongly punished in the sales ring. Or you could end up with no successful cover and go empty for the year. If you go empty for the year, you've lost all your money, you've lost your opportunity cost. If you're trying to make a young mare, you've lost having a runner in the track to help your mare get established. So there are many ways that the small breeders and the commercial breeders without deep pockets are being affected. And when we lose them, as we are, and continue to, the industry itself is going to weaken as we go forward. I know the Jockey Club is primarily concerned with the concentration in the gene pool. And 43 stallions with over 140 mares, and some incredibly, like you mentioned, into mischief, with books over 200, the huge amount of concentration. I'm not a geneticist, so I'm not qualified to know or speculate what this concentration may mean for the industry and the viability of the breed. So I'm hoping that we'll hear from more qualified people than me on that score. But I do know that these oversized books are often harmful to breeders, not just in the way that I recounted financially, but in a number of other related ways as far as the long-term effectiveness of the industry is concerned. We've got a couple of related issues that I don't really hear people talk much about. One is that we've exported so much of our quality bloodlines over the last 30 years without a proportional importation of quality bloodlines. I think that impacts the integrity of the gene pool going forward, the American gene pool. And in many cases, American breeders and buyers largely turn up their noses at high-quality foreign imports if they haven't seen them raised in front of them or if they're not being hyped in some way by the media or the other people who influence opinion. The other, and maybe even the most important concern, and this is related to the large books, is that stallion owners allow the breeding of very large numbers of mares to first-year stallions and otherwise unproven stallions. I think that's detrimental to the long-term well-being of the American gene pool. And my suggestion for protecting and improving the gene pool would be to go along with the jockey club to allow the breeding of 120 to 140 mares to proven stallions, but only half that number to unproven stallions. I think our gene pool would be a lot better off at the end of the day.
It's, you know, Rob, and that's one of the parts of this that would be fascinating, and I'm anxious to hear from. You talk about geneticists and you know the type of people that study the biodiversity issue, but just the idea that there would be several hundred covers that would be pushed down to that middle portion of stallions, whether they're you know first year at a low price or you know whether they're established that. You know that are not as popular as they used to be, but just the opportunity to get quality mares. I mean, there's obviously a certain percentage of premium mares and quality mares that I suppose they're still going to get to those, you know, those elite stallions. But there would be quality mares that would be forced a little further down, you know, the sire lists, the general sire lists that would get opportunities. And that, you know, you have no idea what that could yield.
Well, I think you make a good point, but it also makes a lot of sense for building a strong stallion community, to have more stallions having an opportunity. Right now, we're sort of a microcosm of America where concentration of power and wealth is in fewer and fewer hands, and there's less for the little guy. And what you're describing is
I lost you here, Rob, for a minute. In a bad spot. Oh, boy. Let's see if we get him back. We lost. Okay. So frustrating. Yeah. Deja, get him back one more time, please. And it's amazing. Yesterday we talked, and I know Rob's got, I know he's got a, he's got back surgery coming up next week, and he's had a series of back surgeries, but I know he's got a, he mentioned that he's got a doctor's appointment that he's leaving for. I don't know if he, if he's, I don't think he was traveling yet. But I'm just, I'm going to pull up the sire list. And there we go. Rob's back. Rob, I got you back here, I think. Yep, there we go.
Yep. Yeah.
Sorry. That's all right. That's all right. We, I was pulling up a sire list, and I'm just, it's interesting. Even a sire like a Lemon Drop Kid, you know, who's long established and, you know, comes from a line that it isn't necessarily sales fashionable. I imagine that if we talked about the, you know, some of the forces, the economic forces that created this whole scenario, I suppose this all goes back to, probably starts with Stormcat to a large degree. But, you know, there was that period where the only thing anybody cared about was how a horse looked in the sales ring. And if they were big and raw and rangy, if they, you know, Dynaformer Sons and Daughters and King Mambo, you know, that got you, you know, a much more raw looking yearling that wasn't going to be all that pretty and shiny, you know, to buyers in the ring, you know, that, I mean, that had to have contributed to, you know, concentrating attention on fashionable sires and the demand, you know, for their progeny.
Yeah, well, I wish I could say that that's changed a lot. You know, I don't think it has.
Well, you were talking about the, you know, the concentration and it being a reflection really of society at large, and I suppose that that's, you know, that's one of the interesting elements of this is that you, for the most part, the interest in the sport, you would think, would be against interference with market conditions, and yet that's essentially what this is, and it's being well received, it seems, for the most part.
Well, I'm happy to hear you're talking about the proposal being well received.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to hear that because it just makes basic sense, you know. And of course, as a 40-year commercial breeder myself, I'm an advocate for the breeder. And it certainly makes sense for the breeders, large and small. You know, the main reason I'm in favor of it is it'll finally give the breeder something more of a fair shake. It's increasingly difficult for breeders to make ends meet and turn a profit, and that's why they're disappearing. And these huge books greatly increase the difficulty, especially when some stallion owners lack transparency and won't tell you up front what the final book size will be. So it's often rather dispiriting to breed your mare to a stallion and then find that they've got, they've been bred to 200 other mares, and then when you go to the sales ring, you have to compete with huge number of others, and you know the sales scene is one of comparison where you might have a really, really good one, but if there's 30 other really, really good ones, yours might be shuffled down the priority list. So there are many ways that I'm excited for this proposal. I hope it gets traction, I hope it's studied a little more in terms of the concentration effects going forward. We'll have to see how it plays out.
And you know, Rob, one thing that occurs to me too, we've right away saw that there were suggestions that some of the farms most affected would might be compelled to to shuttle if they aren't shuttling currently, and I suppose that there's the potential from an international basis if there's going to be more sons and daughters of North American sires out in the world, what you referenced in terms of bringing foreign stock. I mean, foreign stock has been the introduction of foreign bloodstock. I mean, look at Candy Ride. The history of American breeding is been bolstered forever by the introduction of international bloodstock.
Well, absolutely. And that's apparently overlooked in practice. Candy Rye, the first couple of years he was at John Secura's Hillendale farm, I bred eight mares to Candy Rye. I couldn't sell a single one for a profit, because the American mentality is not to accept international stock. And, of course, he went on. He's such a terrific sire. He went on to prove himself over time and went up the ladder the hard way. What most, in my opinion, most Americans don't realize or internalize is that our whole world is slowly becoming global, and we need to get with it in that regard.
Yeah, this could be this could be an important step and something that has very tangible benefit for the health of the marketplace, and there's a lot of moving parts. Rob, before we go, I've got to ask you what these days. You've pared back. You still have got six mares of your own, but what do you continue to be most proud of in your career?
The thing I'm most proud of, actually, is 23 years ago, I got a small group of friends to join with me, and we put together the Horse Farm Workers Educational Assistance Fund to give scholarships to full-time horse farm workers, kids who were trying education after high school. And it's still thriving. A wonderful organization, and I hope we continue to get support.
Well, Rob, any reason I can find to get you to join us is a good one, and far too long since we talked last. And good luck with. And I told everybody while we were getting you back at one point, you got another back surgery coming up, and I hope this one does the trick. I know it's been a battle for you on that front.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping five is the charm.
Well, sometimes the fifth, not the first fall, the second fall, sometimes it takes a few cracks at it, right?
Absolutely. I made a whole career out of picking up on mares where other people gave up. So, yeah, five's a good number.
Rob, thanks so much, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. So long, Steve. It's great to be with you.
Rob Whiteley. an absolute, just a legend. Just decades and decades of success and influence in this sport. Let's take a break. Dick Powell's going to join us. We'll look at last night, the Presque Isle Mile, the Malvern Rose, and more. Catch up with Dick after this. Andy Serling, top of the hour as well. Jessica Martini from The Sail. And the Todds, Glenn and daughter Shelley, after a huge weekend at Hastings. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade One race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, about 10, 12 minutes to the top of the hour. Andy Serling joins us next, right now. Dick Powell, and last night we were looking forward to the Presque Isle Mile. They also ran the Pennsylvania bred Malvern Rose. Dick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good night for Woodbine Shippers, because they ran 1-2. In the Presque Isle Mile, right at a mile of 16th. And so it was a game effort by the winner, because Pat Husbands, who has an unusual seat on a horse, he kind of reminds me of Ramon Dominguez. He's way up over the withers and not down low like some riders do. And he has a tremendous record going long, so horses relax from him. Well, this was a fast pace, and it was a contested pace. So when he kind of made that bold move
going to the half mile pole. I'm like, oh boy, that's going to be tough to hold on from there. And he spurred it at the top of the stretch. He opened up a little bit of daylight. The horses who had been chasing him started to, you know, run out of energy. And then Special Forces and Alan Garcia closed, oh God, 5-6 wide around the far turn. He got up to second, but he was no real threat to the winner. And Mr. Ritz, as you mentioned, owned by Earl Mack, who's been in the winner's circle a few times lately, including Saturday, and a new track record for a mile 16th, 141.91. Horse looked good. He came off a grade 3 win up at Woodbine on a Tapeta, comes down here, wins a $200,000 stake race on a Tapeta, and he's by Oasis Dream, which is more turfbred than dirtbred, so I don't know where they'll go with him. But again, nice horse, and Josie's always dangerous when she shifts in. She's just, you got to really watch out when Josie comes in, and the bettors responded to that because they made Mr. Ritz a 23-10 favorite. And the race wound up turning out logical. The top three picks all finished first, third, second. You know, it was a good job by the handicappers. And yet, with the favorite over the third choice, Zach comes back $35. So that was just a terrific price and nice renewal of the Presque Isle Mile.
Now, this is a horse that Mack actually bred in Great Britain. And it's funny, just finished with Rob Whiteley talking about the imports. This happens to be a colt. This is not not a gelding. He's out of an Argentinian mare. So some of the things we just talked about with Rob on display here. And, of course, Ohio came in as well from Del Mar for Michael McCarthy. And ran well. He ran okay. Ended up third in here. And one of the nice things about a stake like this is always for the local fans. And I see it when at the time I went to Charlestown for the classic. Joel Rosario came into town and rode and was on High North, for instance, for Shug. And, obviously the Canadian jocks aren't, Garcia and Husbands don't necessarily have the same following. But, I mean, for the locals to, to see Joel and Tyler Gaffleone came in and he rode. So, it's always one of the nice treats for local fans when some of these regional, whether it's, like the Ohio Derby Day and Indiana Derby Day, those kinds of things. People really come out for that.
Oh, definitely. And it was a treat. And also, the race held up very well. We had 10 starters in the race. As I talked last week, sometimes a lot of horses enter and then they don't start. But 10 went, and Ohio looked like he kind of got victimized by the rail. He drew post one. And got a little shuffled back when What's Up Dude and Mr. Ritz were able to get to the front. He was kind of in traffic, shuffled back to fifth, then came on again. And he was a very good third. That was a tough effort for him. But the winner was, man, I did not think he could hang on that last half mile because he was under pressure and they were running. And I looked at all the other times last night, Steve, and nothing sticks out. I mean, the other races were not particularly fast, and this one kind of jumps off the page as far as final time and everything. And I had a nice pace to set up the final time. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what Josie does with this one, whether she tries Breeders' Cup Mile on the turf or Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, if she's interested in going to the Breeders' Cup or anything like that. I mean, Earl Mack's pretty game. He's
absolutely.
Earl Mack won I think it was the first Melbourne Cup I ever went to. He just missed winning. He'll go anywhere with a good horse, especially. So he has a nice one here with Mr. Ritz.
No, and of course, combined with Team Valor over the weekend in New York. So, yeah, he's. I tell you what, Earl Mack right now, I think, has got as many prominent horses as I can ever remember.
Right, yeah. You know, the one I remember, because he was in the first stall in Howie Teschen's barn, was Excellent Tipper. That big New York bred that Mr. Mack had, and he won $500,000-$600,000, a lot of state bred stake races and stuff like that. And he was with Howie for years, and he's in Europe, he's in America, breeding global type horses like this one. And
yeah.
And he, you know, he said something Saturday. I really appreciate it. You win a big race, and what's the first question? What's next? And he even, like, kind of very kindly said, I'd like to enjoy this one, you know, like,
yeah.
Instead of, like, thinking, well, what do you got next? Oh, okay, but hello, we just won the race. I'd like to enjoy it a little bit without pondering where they're going to go, especially it hadn't seemed like him and Barry Irwin had really consulted on the topic. But, you know, Mac was a gentleman the way he phrased his answer.
Turn our attention, in addition to the mile, last night, right ahead of it, came the Pennsylvania bred filly race and the three-year-olds for the Malvern Rose. And, you know, just the fact that LNJ Foxwoods, you know, they paid $120,000 for Ledecca, and it's kind of interesting that the Roths quite eager to take advantage of the state bred program here and come in and run. This is a $100,000 stake, and she cut back to a mile, first time on synthetic, although at Fair Hill, Arno Delacour can work her and has worked her you know, steadily on the synthetic track too. So, Ledecca, a nice winner, and was, I think, third choice in here under Daniel Centeno.
Now let me make a quick point. At Fair Hill, if you notice her workouts, the last work was on the Tapeta. The one before that was on dirt at Fair Hill. Before that was Tapeta. So when it says training track, that's the Tapeta. When it says Fair Hill, nothing else,
right.
Just that.
Just dirt, yeah.
So when Irish War Cry was down there, he was training on the dirt, not necessarily the Tapeta.
Right.
So Ledecca had been training on both surfaces, had been racing on the turf, and here we have a Colonial Downs shipper, which we haven't said in a long time, shipping in and winning a stake race. This race, that's killed me, Steve, because my top pick here was Redeem My Heart. 10-1, guns to the front.
Oof.
Looked like it might hang on, and then Ledecca ran her down. So paid $940 to play, so that's nice. But I thought Redeem My Heart had a big shot. The race went in 38.61. Now, granted, it's PA Breds, but it was watching this race, you didn't have any idea that Mr. Ritz was going to run that fast. But this race also had a much slower pace, where the Mr. Ritz race, I mean, they were motoring right out of the gate. And, but this was a nice one for Ledecca, and, you know, she has all sorts of options available, and now she's a Tisnow Stakes winning daughter, so that enhances her value for LNJ Foxwoods. And nice ride by Daniel Centeno, because he stayed in contact with a slow pace and then took over when he had to late in the game.
You mentioned the Colonial ship-in. It's quite notable looking at these two stakes, and we'll see it later with the Masters when the fillies and mares come in to go, you know, to go the 7/8. But you had horses come in from Colonial, Penn National, Delaware, Parks, Laurel, Monmouth, Del Mar. High North was last seen at Oaklawn. Arlington, Mountaineer, and we mentioned Woodbine already. 10 different tracks showing up at Presque. That's pretty cool.
No, it was. It was. And,
Next Monday, we go to the big one, the Presque Isle Masters, $400,000 Grade Two, 6.5 mile long sprint. So we got that coming up, and that usually has Breeders' Cup implications. So that's certainly a race worth following for fans out there.
Absolutely. Well, how about the bread and butter action?
Well, the jockey chase has now evened off, where Gallardo has 109 winners, Pablo Morales has 109 winners, Gallardo has 86 second places, Pablo Morales has 86 second places. So I'd say this is a pretty tight race. And they've run 77 days of racing, so that's 616 races. And these two riders have won 218 of those races, 35%. So you go from 109, the next rider is Scott Spieth with 47, Ronnie Allen 42. I mean, it drops off pretty significantly. So Gallardo and Morales are just killing it. And it should go right down to the wire. And a little sidebar here is that we had a more mature sports betting market. This would be a nice proposition wager to have, even at this point. You know, you don't always have to do these things before the meet begins.
That's true.
You can do
that's
these traps at any point. And I don't know where I would go. I mean, Gallardo had been about 10 ahead, and now Morales caught him. Gallardo has a little bit more money won, a little bit higher win percentage, but still, that's amazing statistics. They both have 109 wins and 86 second-place finishes. Jerry Brooks continues to lead the trainers. Von Potts second, Teresa Conley third. John Borks, the guy who's kind of moved up the ladder, he's now fourth with 24 wins. But no real changes in the placings. Brooks has been ahead the whole meet, and he looks like he will continue to be ahead for the whole meet. And I talked about the Masters next week. And don't forget, on PresqueIsleDowns.com, just click on racing, and my daily picks are up there. One of the nice things they do is they have everything archived. So if you want to look at last night's picks, you could see that we had the cold exactor in the Masters and almost had Redeem My Heart and Malvern Rose. But even the nights when I go over 8, they're up there, and you can read the analysis and hopefully get something out of it. Tonight I'm going to start out with a cold double. Race 4 Marmalade is even money on the morning line. That's usually a sign the horse is going to be 3-5. This horse has won 10 times here at Presque Isle. Drops down in class toward, you know, it's kind of an NDV drop down. And Marmalade looks tough with Gallardo. So we'll just play a cold double with the 9, Cambion. Dave Marcraft had this one 3 starts over to Tapita. All were good. Hasn't graduated yet, but most of those starts early in his career were against much better maidens. So we'll go cold, early double, 4-9. Early double, 4-9. And we're going to go to race number 5. And this is a pretty nice race here with the 2-year-old optional claimant, 62,500. Now winners of a race. Attracted a good field of 7. I'm going to go with New York Groove. And this is the Commonwealth New Era Racing, as Todd Mostel's partnership. And I ran into Todd the last Saturday of the meet. He was in town for one of the horses' races, so just by chance I happened to see him and catch up with him. John Bork is trying to just romp in its first start. Came from off the pace, just one going away. Looked like a really nice filly. So she's taking on boys this time, but I think she's more than good enough to do it. So I'm just going to play a cold exactly here, 5 with 1-4, Bear Creek and Flying Emperor. Both of them are pretty decent prices on the morning line. So 5 with 1-4, cold exactor in race number 5. And then in the finale, race 8, I like a 7-2 shot here. Jeremiah Englehart ships in L.A. Page. What's kind of an even third, beaten 7 lengths in his Tapita debut. That was against better. Now drops down in class. Race over the track, class drop. I think it's enough to get the job done. Rider switch to Pablo Morales. So we'll key
L.A. Page with the six. I admire you. Gallardo rides for Dan Conway Jr. Conway's been shipping in from Finger Lakes and winning 36% with the ones that he does bring in. This one just looks like it fits. And we'll see if Gallardo can get him involved early. But 5-6 in the last race, like the way to go for tonight at Prescott Downs.
Very nice. Now, certainly a nice time of year, and it doesn't seem like the deer have jumped the fence at all this year, where they haven't been invading the racetrack. Dick, I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. I'll talk to you on Thursday.
We'll talk Thursday. We'll talk Hong Kong and some interesting results Saturday, and, of course, the return tomorrow of Happy Valley to the landscape, too. Let's take a break. Top of the hour, a little past. Andy Serling joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you're dressing up, still it's not enough. Who you trying to impress, man? Need you for some love? Try to be someone. Try to be someone.
We're back at the races, about 10 minutes into hour two. Busy Tuesday. Andy Serling back with us. And, of course, Belmont started on Friday. A little bit of a weather interference early, but the big races on Saturday, they were unaffected. And the interesting pair of races, the two Jockey Club Invitationals, plus the long-distance dirt race, the Grand Prix, where Marconi pretty much wire to wire. Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
We're good. Good.
Glad to hear it.
Well, I'm digesting still the action from the weekend. And I mentioned everybody yesterday in just hitting the highlights about the Spanish Mission win. The point you made about the difficulty for American three-year-olds at this time of year versus the Euros, you know, going this route of ground.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Euros have extensive experience. First of all, their pedigrees in general are probably more tilted, or the horses we're going to see certainly in these races are more tilted towards longer distances than ours. But also, they have extensive experience at this time going around a ground. Just look at the BPs of the Europeans that came over here. Whereas there are no the mile and quarters, the farthest, right? The Belmont Derby and the Belmont Oaks, the farthest they've been asked, 3-year-olds asked to go in a race. I mean, there are, I mean, to be fair, you know, we offer at NYRA allowance races, an extensive grade allowance with big purses, 90,000 plus, round of grounds. Those are 3-year-old and up races, if anything. And in all likelihood, people aren't going to try them. Now, you saw Kieran McLaughlin and Tommy Albertrani ran third and fourth in the Oaks and run one at Saratoga. And it probably benefited them. But we don't really have the opportunity and experience for 3-year-olds. I mean, look at, we have this abundance of 3-year-old turf stakes, and they're shorter distances. And so the Europeans, I mean, let's, you know, looking at who the Europeans brought over, Aidan O'Brien brought over his 17th and 18th best horses for our other races, horses that were ineffective, basically, and people, Europeans, others, because Aidan O'Brien didn't bring any for this race, they brought the right horses. I mean, there were six Europeans. Two ran 1-2 in the Oaks, and the other three, the three that ran the Derby, finished 1-2-3. They had extensive distance experience. They were okay horses. I mean, they weren't world beaters, but they were okay. And they had real experience on the turf going along. And it obviously gave them a huge advantage in these races. And it'll continue, in all likelihood, if we keep running these long-distance races in this series of races. Make of it what you will. They were fun races. I mean, I enjoyed them. They were logical results. I mean, a long shot almost won. I think that Spanish Mission was clearly best and won by a desperate nose. I don't think anybody watching the race would argue that he probably should have won by more. But regardless, and you could say the same thing for Adisa, who did not get the best of trips, and the winner got the second horse in that race got it. Sensational trip, but you know they were fun races and logical results. But once again, the Europeans had a tremendous advantage, not just in talent, but I mean I don't think that if they ran the race to mile to 16th, he would have seen a much different result, mile and eight. And I don't know, it just seems like for us we're going to be disadvantaged in that third leg going forward unless something changes.
You know, when handicapping these, and you mentioned the big price, that Pedro Cara, that was the longest shot on the board, which was...
Well, that was silly, but I underestimated the talent in the Spanish Derby, clearly, this year. I thought it wasn't as strong a race as it was. Clearly, it was very good. Maybe it's a great prep. Maybe the Spanish Derby is a great prep for the Jockey Club Derby. Who knew?
Exactly. I said that yesterday. I said, I don't think I've ever seen a horse run in the U.S. that ran in the Spanish Derby. I can't remember seeing Madrid.
I think one of the great things about the race is that we learned there was a Spanish Derby, with all due respect.
Exactly.
But, I think, look, I obviously underrated the horse. I mean, the horse should have been 38-1, but Digital Age shouldn't have been 5-2. People badly misunderstood the importance of distance in that race, the betting. I mean, I understand Digital Age is probably the best horse. They're going a mile and a 16th, a mile and an eighth, but I don't think he was the best horse in a mile and a half. He also got a ridiculous trip. I mean, he wasn't winning, but you know, he just got about as ridiculous a trip in that race as you could possibly get.
And then, let's see, Thread of Blue was coming off the Saratoga win. And,
he's a really nice horse. But yeah. Wow, horse.
And then is there anything to take away from the girls' race?
Not really. I mean, you know, the winner's nice. We're not going to, you know, there's nothing to take away from these races for us because we're not going to see these horses again. The only thing to take away from it is our horses want next to no part of these long-distance races. I mean, the Philly race was slow, right? It's not like Kieran McLaughlin's horse or Tommy Albertine's horse who ran third and fourth ran particularly well. The race got an 87 buyer.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good race. It was fun to watch. I enjoyed handicapping it, but in the pantheon of what makes, you know, big races, it wasn't a race that's going to have any meaning. I mean, what's her name? Concrete Rose would have won if she held the distance.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, in fact,
Rusty. Faster than these horses by a lot.
Yeah. Rusty actually said yesterday, because he had the two wins Saturday at Kentucky Downs, he said it kind of took the sting out of not having Concrete Rose in New York. Yeah, I think he recognized that she would have been a handful there.
If she handled the distance, and she certainly had no problem mile 316th, albeit setting a very slow pace, but it's not like they were moving yesterday and then this race on Saturday. So I don't know. I mean, who knows? You don't know unless they had ran. But I mean, judging by what we saw, she would have been hard to beat.
How much of that, by the way, how much of those splits, might that reflect that the turf was maybe softer than good?
Which course was that one on, the inner or the?
The girls' race was on the inner.
The inner was firmer than the wider on Friday, so.
Interesting.
And I'd have to go back and look at, I feel like the inner was okay. So I don't know. Just might not have been that strong a race.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
The three-year-old fillies this year, I mean, Concrete Rose was obviously the best one of them, but it wasn't that close. The newspaper record just didn't move forward. The three-year-old fillies so far this year have been somewhat disappointing. They're okay, but they're really not that good. This is not one of them. Often we see pretty strong three-year-old filly turf crops. This is not one of them.
Well, it happens. Let me get your read on the Grand Prix.
The race they let, despite Marconi not breaking, the three horse who was the clear speed, even Marconi broke, decided to rate, and Realm didn't go forward. Marconi didn't break sharply. They let Marconi go 50 and change the half on a gold rail. With all due respect to Marconi, who obviously proved best. I think the only thing we learned from that race is some people weren't paying attention, to be honest.
Yeah, I was surprised the way the whole thing
was. Yeah, it was an oddly run race, especially given that he didn't break particularly sharply, and how they just let him go to lead like that. I mean, geez. Why was Roaming Union entered in that race if the intention wasn't to be aggressive and send the front? He's clearly the fastest horse. They were absolutely walking. Yet he was being rated outside on a track that was kind of inside runners. And I know it was the first dry track day at Belmont, but, you know, you've got to pay attention to the racetrack. And Belmont has, especially in the spring and summer, had some gold rails. And much like Saratoga was dominated by tracks you probably didn't want to be inside, you know, recent history at Belmont has had the inside good. It was good on Saturday. It was great on Sunday. You know, if you're not paying attention to these things, what are you paying attention to? And why would you cede an advantage? Would Marconi have won if he chased Roman Union outside in a more honest pace? Maybe, you know. It's not like anybody else ran particularly well in there. I mean, the horse who ran second just sucked along on the rail, right? You're to blame.
Yeah.
So I'm going to reserve judgment. I don't know. Where's Graham Ocean's horse that won the Birdstone? King Zachary.
Oh, he ran somewhere else
the other
day. Yes,
where?
He ran.
Where
did he just ran?
There was another $300,000 mile and a half dirt race.
There was another, you know, $100,000 or something or other.
Hold on, Zachary,
I'll tell you right away.
Right?
Yeah,
really?
I think so. Oh no, he didn't. He hasn't run since. No, He might have been entered. He might have been entered somewhere, because I could have sworn.
He wasn't entered in this one, so that seemed weird to me. I have no idea.
That's true. I mean, the Birdstone was a mile and a half.
If it was Birdstone, he would have trounced this field. No, Birdstone's mile and three quarters.
Mile three quarters.
There he was in front of a mile and a half point, though.
Well, then let's focus on a couple of other performances, including, you know, that maiden race that everybody was looking forward to.
The fifth race on Saturday came up kind of a stinker, huh?
Yeah, it did. It came back slow.
It was very slow. It was very. Yeah. You knew it was slow watching it. I mean, it was considerably slower than that performance on a gold rail by a service horse earlier in the day. Well, I mean, to be fair, the winner, what's the winner's name again?
Alpha 66.
To be fair, that horse was 3-4 wide, and the inside was good, and the runner-up rode the gold rail. And the pace was very slow in that race, which probably affected it somewhat. The Chad Brown Carvage horse didn't run at all Democratic Values, and that horse was highly touted. He didn't take a lot of money, but he was expected to be okay, and he didn't run at all. He was terrible. And the winner won, but a 72 buyer. And the one thing you could say about it was, slow pace, wide trip on a good rail. So he's probably a bit better than it looks. I'd be looking forward to betting against the horse in the rail next time he runs, the Godolphin horse. That was an odd race, yeah. That was one of those races where people said, you know, something was going to happen in this race, and it didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's funny because on Friday there had been an opening day at Los Al. There was a very nice group of maidens as well. And that race came back slow. Mohawk and the brother of Noldy, and that ended up being anticlimactic. Kind of funny.
It happens.
Yeah, that's, you don't know. And, you know, most of them first-time starters, that kind of thing. We'll give them another shot. You know who I want to ask you about? There was that 7-furlong turf race, and Todd Pletcher has Halliday, lightly raced, and seems like you know, there's some place for him to go. I mean, certainly from a breeding standpoint, Warfront out of the nice high tap.
Think he's going to prove a big fire in the racing game?
Who?
You said someplace for him to go. He was talking about his pedigree, somewhere to go. Where's he going? There's a problem for three-year-olds like Halliday, and I think it's the same problem, of course, a three-year-old like Front Run the Fed faces. These are probably horses that are somewhat distance limited. They're probably 7/8 of mile horses. There are no 3-year-old mile turf races that I can think of, basically, at this point going forward for colts.
Right.
You know, where do they go? Unless they want to cut them back and try the sprint, you know, and try that sprint on early October, I think, the Belmont Sprint Championship, and take a shot and see if they have another world of trouble if they run the Breeders' Cup turf sprint.
Right.
They're kind of hamstrung. I don't see Halliday being effective at a mile and eighth of the Hill Prince. Maybe Todd was thinking about looking at it, but it's a big difference between seven. I don't think that race was that good, the Halliday race. And it got a decent figure. It was very much dominated in the front end and a compromise. I think the closers in there, or maybe the closers weren't that good, but I think it was more a controlled race in the front end. But it's hard, you know. I mean, right now there just aren't the opportunities. You know, we have so many of these turf stakes, Saratoga and different things, and, you know, we added this turf triple. Yet there aren't, you know, they've got the Better Talk Now at the end of Saratoga. You've got the, what, like the Paradise Creek and that's seven, and then you've got race name for, I think, another Mott horse on July, oh, no, race on July 4th. Manila at a mile. And then you've got that Better Talk Now at the end of Saratoga at a mile, and that's it. I don't think we have another mile turf state for three-year-olds.
Hmm.
So, you know, might be worth thinking about spreading things out and changing things a bit, especially if we're going to continue to run this turf triple series, right? You've got the Pebbles for fillies that we moved from Columbus Day to this weekend because we moved the Sands Point, because we didn't make the Sands Point the Jockey Club Oaks, the Grade Two. One who made these initial races, we moved that to the second week in October, which is presumably an aqueduct this year, but regardless, we moved that a month. We switched positions, I think, these two races, figuring a mile race more, but we've got that for the three-year-old fillies. I don't know what's going for that race, but we'll see. through to.
Right.
We'll see. You know, tricky. All these races we keep talking about, right? It obviously, you know, wasn't. It was okay for the boys. The Hall of Fame came up solid at Saratoga. Saranac did not. But, you know, we saw the Lake George, obviously, with three horses this year. And slightly better for the Lake Placid. But obviously, there's some good decisions to be made about these races, what you do with all of them, right?
Yes. And it's a problem. It's a problem on a wider basis too. Because,
well, sure, you got now the Virginia Derby is back. And,
exactly.
You know that you'll get that Colonial Downs, and then you've got the races at Kentucky Downs. First year, I saw griping about Kentucky Downs on Twitter. Let them join the rest of the world. Kentucky Downs joined the rest of us in racetracks, and people complaining about them on Twitter this year. First time. I know it's shocking to you that people complain about things on Twitter. It was surprising to people that I was joking on Twitter yesterday about when the sale started at Keeneland.
That was great. I thought that was very.
I feel bad that a lot of people, nice people, took me seriously. I was not serious. My entire Twitter feed was dominated by either people complaining about Kentucky Downs or talking about the Keeneland sales.
What was the complaint? What's the complaint? What was the complaint?
The favorites were winning, and there was a speed bias. I'll be honest, I didn't pay attention to the race this year. It's just too much going on. They're too complicated for me to play unless I'm going to actually, you know, dedicate some real time to looking at them. I don't really feel like dedicating that time. I'm more interested in reading some books after Saratoga than I am in looking at these turf races at Kentucky Downs. But I heard of the speed bias, and I think speed bias and short prices. I'm trying to condense the Twitter complaints. Listen, they've been on quite an express of the love express on Twitter, so they were due. To take a beating like the rest of us.
making me laugh. Twitter's
the tail. Remember that.
Speaking of favorites winning, it was a.
We had a lot of that at Belmont.
Yes, we did. And the funny thing was that the biggest price, the first couple of days was Chad.
Until it's seventh on Sunday, the only horse that paid over $10 was Turf War. Who was a little tough to make, by the way. Not to be kind. The second edition of the stop switch. I mean, I don't blame the rider. It was just one of those things where it seemed like that, you know, there was a favorite. It was the lone speed. So tracking that horse, and you would think theoretically is the right trip to have gotten. As it turned out, the favorite completely stopped and the pace was extremely fast. So Brooke Marie ran very well to be second. Turf War was fortunate to take advantage of that. But I'm sure Marty Schwartz will say that he deserved a break. He does get his share of bad trips, I have to admit. Right, that's Marty owns that horse, right?
Yes, yes. Bred by Calumet.
Interesting.
Which is really, you know...
The one they didn't keep.
Well, exactly. They're doing both. I mean, they're selling. This was actually a very pricey... This was a $425,000 Saratoga yearling.
Well, now winner of the prestigious Christie Cup.
In the third start in North America.
And can't move him forward and run in the Pebbles because that race is now this weekend.
Good point.
So she, too, is in limbo. And she can run against Olders. I mean, it is time for the three-year-olds to run against Olders, right?
Yeah, September.
I mean,
September
there's no reason
the,
for...
The, no. Clock strikes, midnight for them, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I get, well, there's those races in Pennsylvania, but, you know, that's why I'm really glad to see that Suge is pointing Code of Honor to the jockey club. I last heard Mott was saying that the task is the same, and I'm glad to see that, you know, those top three-year-olds are running against Olders. And to me, that's what should happen in the fall of racing. Everybody shouldn't be sitting around waiting for the Breeders' Cup. Time to take on the Olders. And to be frank, this is a good year to be taking on the Olders. With all due respect to preservationists and I'm a fan of. The owners aren't scaring anybody this year.
Yeah, so, that's fair.
Looking forward
that's
to that.
Fair.
Yeah.
A couple of other notes. Uncle Benny back finally in the win column.
Yeah, that fig, that race got an 80 fig. I think it's too low. It just doesn't make sense for the horses in there. They're all better than that. We discussed that fig with Andy. But anyway, yeah, he did. He got it. You know, nice, good setup. It was an odd race because it was the second race of the day, speed turf sprint, where the clear speed got scratched the gate. Right? We had the incident, but that wasn't scratched the gate. The one in the earlier race, I think the sixth race, that horse was scratched coming out of the chute. But we had the favorite, the speed, the three horse, the Wesley Ward horse, the boom horse. He broke through and ran off. And by the way, incredible performance by overall, but Saturday especially by our outriders in running down especially boom horse. Wow. That horse left the course, went to dirt, and just a great job in the whole. I mean, it was east for vantage point on the third floor studio, but just the manner in which they were able to corral these horses. You know, so the same thing with horse Norrell, his name escapes me. Bozart. These guys do a great job. They really do. But that changed. But yeah, they go, you know, Uncle Benny's sort of back. We'll see how good he really is. You know, I mean, he's got a long way to go. He's no World of Trouble, I'll tell you that.
No. Well, the World of Trouble's got a World of Trouble now with that hoof is not healing. And it's looking more and more questionable whether he's going to get a shot.
I'm assuming that we won't be seeing him until
it's too bad.
Next year. Well, he got a stud deal, right?
Yes. Yes, he's going to. He's coming to Hillendale.
Yeah, terrific course. Well,
to stand with his.
I know somebody who recommended he run the Carter. It's grade one win in the dirt.
Who was that?
Once again, Carter.
The Carter is a kingmaker. It's a kingmaker.
One of the world's great races. What else, Steve? Oh, it's after 10:30. I can go.
No, you can't. What about you got a play for? You got 100. Something for people? You can wait another 4 minutes. Give everybody a little something for tomorrow. Come on.
I'm off tomorrow.
You're off tomorrow?
I am off tomorrow.
You've been off for, you were off Tuesday,
I was
Wednesday,
off what?
Thursday.
I was off what? I was
3
off
days.
What? I was off what, Steve? I'm off tomorrow. Sorry.
All right. Right.
You took almost all of Saratoga off, as I recall.
Oh, that's just mean.
No, that was deserved. That was deserved.
I took off.
You started the obnoxiousness, so you deserved it. I'm off tomorrow.
I think the public will.
They'll be okay. They'll get through a day without me. Believe me.
All right. Well, looking ahead to the weekend. Let's at least do that. You mentioned the Pebbles, and. You know, people should make some plans. We got some state bred action as well next week, like the Bond Guard, and that's where the Sacatoga
is. That right?
Cold, apparently. Yeah, that's where they're headed.
Great.
That's what I understand.
What's his name again? I keep forgetting his name.
We're going to forget it again. Oh my God!
The law. Tis the law.
Tis the law. There we go. Tis the law. Because I was looking at the schedule, because I've got to prepare Tina for a couple of trips down to Belmont. Like Gold Cup Day, for everybody that hasn't made plans yet, is the 28th. And you got the Gold Cup, the Beldame, the Pilgrim, and the Vosburgh. And then you come back on Sunday, because these are all split up now over the two weekends. So be aware of the way the schedule falls. The Ms. Grillo is on Sunday, and then the following Saturday and Sunday, you come back with the Turf Sprint Invitational you referenced, the Champagne, the Hill Prince, the Joe Hirsch, and the Matron. And then on the Sunday, the Frisette and Flower Bowl and the Futurity. So the last weekend in September, first weekend in October for the Belmont Fall Championship races. That
I think you're taking, them off too. What do you
think? No. I'm not coming if you take them off.
Well, yeah, you will. No, I'm not. I'm off Sunday the 29th. That I'm off.
Okay. All right.
That I'm off. Going to Boston.
Oh, nice. Nice. That's nice. Well, Andy, I appreciate this, as always.
Sorry, I don't have more for you, Steve.
There wasn't more to add.
I searched and I tried, but I don't.
We had an abbreviated, we only had 3 days of racing.
At least I wasn't eating. At least I, you know, we're yawning. I had just woken up, actually.
Nice. Well, what's on the agenda today?
I'm going to finish reading the new Richard Russo book, Chances Are. I'm going to meet some friends for lunch, and I might go see The Load at Lincoln Center.
Nice.
And I might get my hair cut. All those things are on the table. I might go down to the Morgan Library and see the Maurice Sendak exhibit.
Excellent.
I mean, we all love Maurice Sendak.
Absolutely. We love doing
there
Chances.
Until October.
We love Chances Are, the great reincarnation movie.
The book is very, very good. Now the book is about friends from college meeting a Martha's Vineyard. Richard Russo, you know, nobody's fool.
Yes.
Very good. All right.
Outstanding. Andy Sterling, everybody.
See you later.
We'll take a bottom of the hour break. Jessica Martini. Never too early for a martini when it's Jessica Martini. From the TDN, she's next. Stay with us.